Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. This is Susan Parker, your host of the Bouncing Back Summit, and we have a really special person with us today, Dr. Michelle Pedicola. And before we chat to her, I'd like to share a little bit about this event, just in case you're listening for the first time. In this interview, we'll be talking about how to find the courage and the strength to renew your dreams, to find meaning and value in your loss, gain clarity, and move through your grief journey. I myself, with a panel of fabulous experts, are sharing what it means to transform loss into gifts and opportunity. I suggest you listen to each call to get the most out of this free event. Every morning we'll send you an email with a link to the interviews of the day, so watch for those. And feel free to grab a pen and paper because I know you'll want to take notes. But let's get started. Dr. Michelle Pedicolas is with us today, and I think you're really going to enjoy this talk. She has been working in the field of death and loss for over 15 years. She has a PhD in sociology with a minor in psychology and a study cutting-edge death pioneers such as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, known for the five stages of grief, and Stephen Levine, director of the First Consciousness Dying Project. Michelle produced an award-winning three-part documentary series, Secrets of Life and Death. I would love to have Michelle tell us more about that and making the movie and the work that she's been doing. So, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. I really looking forward to this.
Absolutely. All right. Well, before we get to your movie and stuff, I'd love to hear a little bit about you and your journey and how you got interested in this work. I'm really curious about that.
Yes. Well, thank you for asking, because, of course, for a long time I was pretty clueless around death and grief. Pretty much like anybody else out in this world, had a tendency to just tap things down or put them aside or compartmentalize them. And it wasn't until my parents started to die that it just finally really hit me in a very big way. And what happened was they actually died in the same year, about 6 months apart. First, my father from Alzheimer's, and he'd been going downhill for a number of years. In fact, for a number of years, we didn't even notice that he was going downhill. So there was a lot of ways in which I was relieved when he passed away, because it was so hard to see such an intelligent, brilliant man, you know, just disappear. But then, a month later, my mother was diagnosed with the return of her breast cancer, which she had had 8 years before, and it came back. Only this time it had spread throughout her body, and she was, you know, she had to go through a life-saving operation, and then she tried chemo, and really it was too far advanced, and so she decided that was it. She was finished. So at the time I was living, I had just moved to California, and she and my family lived back on the East Coast. So I went back to help her finish up business and basically prepare to die. And I have to tell you, I thought that I knew about death because I had been studying with a spiritual teacher for 13 years. Oh, I got there, and what a shock, because it wasn't about all these, like, high notions of spirituality and the mystery and magic of death. It was really this kind of nitty-gritty watching somebody lose their capacity and hurrying to get her things done before she died. And it was like, wow. And yeah. Then those moments where she's looking at some of her stuff and she says, oh, I'll never get to that project. Oh my God, I was just wrenched apart. It was just, and I just sort of put it aside. I didn't want to make her feel bad, which in retrospect now I say, no, take somebody into that. Let them experience the feeling. Don't tamp it down. But I didn't know that then. And I right. made a lot of mistakes because nobody had ever taught me about death. Nobody taught me how to be, or the only thing I can say in my that I did do right is I did not try and impose my spirituality on my mother. Thank goodness. So after she died, oh my gosh, I was filled with remorse and regret. I missed the last moments of her being alive because, you know, I didn't know that it was important to be there. And and so I had terrible arguments with my siblings, which is really common because people, when they don't grieve, I mean, you know, we were just so quick to put them, you know, make ashes, put them away in the columbarium and get on with our lives. And,
right.
You know, something like that, it just doesn't go that way. It sticks with you for a long time. So finally, I got really curious. I decided, wow, I really want to know about this. And at the time, I was doing a TV show in San Francisco called On the Edge. And I decided to do a show on death and actually did a two-parter and interviewed people. And I got hooked. I said, wow, this is amazing stuff. I have so much to learn. And the show, because it was community access and it was, you know, made mistakes, it wasn't perfect. I said, and besides, it wasn't long enough. I said, oh, I got to make a documentary. So that's when I decided to make a documentary. And I'd never made a documentary before. I'd been working in video production, but I'd never actually made a documentary. And I had no idea how I was going to do it. And it costs a lot of money to make a documentary.
Sure.
And people do not, I mean, funders do not give money to untried producers. But I just, you know, it's like the whole immensity of death, it gave me the courage, you know, and the curiosity. I have to say the curiosity was really strong. It kept me going because it took me 10 years to finish the first two films.
Wow. So now tell us about the film or the documentary. How did it?
It went through a lot of ups and downs and ins and outs, but magic continued to proceed in terms of finding people and interviewing people, and I learned so much from talking to these people, and that was my real focus, was to understand death.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I started to edit, I had interviewed all these people, and I found out I actually had three films, not one film. So I said, okay, I'll make three short films, which has been great because when I screen the films, I also do a workshop around it and invite people to talk about the things that come up when they see the films.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, and you know, the thing is, I would meet people and they would help me out, or I had access to a camera. And then the first lesson I learned was that I couldn't interview and videotape at the same time. I think there are people that can do it, but I couldn't. So the first interview I did, the person was like off the camera most of the time because, you know, I'm like focusing on her and listening to her and then I look at the camera and, whoops, she's not in this shot anymore.
That's funny.
So that's when I decided I had to get a cameraman. And I found a person who wanted to have the experience, so it worked out really well.
You must have learned so much about the process and the emotions that are going on with the person that's dying and then the loved ones around them, of how that all takes place and what works and what doesn't work and what's good for people.
Well, you know, I truly was looking for people who could be my teachers.
Mm.
So the people that I interviewed or for the first film, which was Facing Death, two of them were literally days from dying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was amazing. And then the other two people are still alive today, but had experienced a close brush with death, and it had transformed their life. And so, you know, you get the two sides of that. You know, one is where you're actually preparing, and one where you never know. You might not die.
Mm.
Except that we all die. It's just that, you know, we learn to live our lives in a different way.
Right.
So that was really powerful, and that was the one that I had Ram Dass in that film.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And then in the next film, it was about caregiving and the lessons for the caregiver. And what I like to call caregiving is a spiritual Olympics, a spiritual Olympic challenge. Because if you really show up, it really puts you through your paces.
You bet. And, yeah, we don't have enough support for that kind of thing, nor do we talk about how hard it is.
Yes. Or when we do talk about how hard it is, then we all get scared. You know what? You know, they have put some documentaries out there, and they're really horrific. And then they have good advice. But then they don't talk about the gifts.
Right.
The spiritual gifts. And it's the spiritual gifts that get you through. It's the magic around accompanying somebody who's dying that gets you through all the difficulty. And, yeah, you also have to take care of your health, and you have to watch for certain tendencies, like wanting to be a martyr or to be the only one that person depends on. I mean, there's a lot of ways in which the ego jumps in there and can mess you up. And then the last film is about grief, and it's an absolutely beautiful film. I'm finished it 2 years after the first two, and it's just really takes people on that journey of what that's like.
So tell me about the spiritual end of it and what you've learned from that.
The spiritual end of it is, for me, can be handled in one word, and that is curiosity.
Mm.
That whatever happens, and of course death is going to happen to all of us, and we have a choice. We can either we can think that we're going to cease to exist, and we can go into it fearfully, or we can actually can live every day and just live it fully, which was one of the men that I accompanied through his death, or we can believe in something. That is, believe in an afterlife, believe that we're going to go somewhere. And that's very reassuring and makes it a lot easier for people who are dying. And so there's that spiritual component there of how can I take every moment, everything that shows up as an opportunity to hone my spirit, to open more to who I am truly and authentically. For me, one of the compelling things about accompanying somebody who's dying, or dying for that matter, is that it's so authentic. It strips away everything. It strips away everyday life. It puts you in touch with what's really, really important.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because that is happening to the person that's dying, but also the loved one that's caring for that person. They're being, you know, broken open, and their heart is broken.
Yes.
Somebody they love.
And for the people who are left behind that are grieving.
Yes.
There is a way in which the people who are left behind have entered different realm, a realm somewhere between life and death for a period of time. You know, that energetically they're drawn into this sort of no man's land. Some people even report experiencing or going through the death and what the person is going through as they travel through to the other side.
Mm.
I haven't done that, but I've had some pretty amazing dreams shortly after somebody's died.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where it seems that they have literally come to visit you.
Yeah.
And, I was a support group facilitator at hospice for 5 years, and that was described frequently, visitations that seemed really real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is such a powerful experience. My father died of cancer several years ago, and he had, you know, it was kind of, we had hospice, and, you know, it was so beautiful to be around him, you know, and just to spend that time with him, you know, to tell him all the things that I wanted to. And, you know,
yes.
I know, you know, he was anxious about, you know, making everyone feel uncomfortable because, you know, he wasn't feeling well. But I am so thankful that I was part of that experience. And also my mother died this past year, and, you know, I was there for that. So so wonderful. My daughter died, and she died in a fire, and of course I didn't get that chance to be with her, but that sense of feeling her around me and having dreams afterwards, oh my gosh. You know,
my goodness,
totally.
You lost. How long ago did you lose your daughter? That sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's been an a journey. 8 years ago, she was.
Wow.
She was 17. But the things I've learned about death and dying through all these experiences is so incredibly powerful, and that's why I, wanted to put this summit together, because I just think we need to have these conversations, because, you know, a lot of us are facing different things that we don't necessarily want in our lives, but there are gifts in those, and like you said,
well,
it's horrible.
That's why you kind of, it's a different perspective. It's a perspective that says when we have pain, it's telling us something. It's not something to be repressed or
right.
shut down, but that we become curious. We say, okay, what am I supposed to be learning here?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, that's hard, but it's the only way I know to go that gets you anywhere.
Right. And I love that sense of curiosity. And that's really what has really helped me, is just being curious, you know, just opening up and being curious about all of it.
Yeah.
Because the worst thing we can do is to get stuck in that and push it down and push it down. And so, you know, that's what we have, a society that wants to do that. They don't want us
yes.
to be sad or angry or, you know.
Right. The only emotion that our society really seems to like is fear. And
you're right.
Fear seems to promote a lot of buying activity, but grief doesn't. Grief kind of interferes with productivity, and it certainly interferes with buying. So we do have a culture that tells us to, you know, have a stiff upper lip and put it aside. I think we have only 3 days bereavement is the allotted amount of time, which is like hysterically absurd.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And that's only for, you know, the legitimate forms of grief. You know, if it's somebody who isn't like in your immediate family, then that doesn't even count. What do you mean you're grieving your friend?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I know. Fascinating.
And I don't even know whether they have a limit on how many of those bereavements you can take in one year. But what I have experienced myself is that deaths tend to run in series. So the year that my father died, my mother died, my uncle died, and my cousin died, all in the same year.
Oh, wow.
And
yeah.
Then several years later, I had 3 friends die, one of them really close. I actually accompanied her while she was dying, and my brother died. That was 4 people.
Oh, my gosh.
They say it runs in threes, but for me it runs in fours.
Whoa. Wow. So in our discussion, we talked a little bit about ways to minimize conflict, and you mentioned that a little bit, that all of this brings up conflict in families and different things. Do you have some ideas about ways our listeners could get support or minimize conflict?
Well, the first and most important thing is to allow your feelings. The reason conflict comes up, or anger, is because we tend not to address our feelings. And so the energy bursts out. Biologically, we need to understand that loss of a loved one through death provokes in the human organism a fear response, a fight, flee, or freeze response, and that it actually has chemical components that happen in the body as a result of that.
Uh-huh.
And so if you don't allow the emotions, all those chemicals kind of get stuck in your body. And one of the acceptable ways more acceptable ways, especially for men, but even for women, instead of grieving, is to get angry. And it sort of lets off some of the steam. It's that fight response. So we channel the grief into fight. But if we allow the feelings, if we sit down and give ourselves time every day to focus in and sit with the feelings, that will help a lot. And then the other thing is to realize the reason why there's so much conflict in the family is because everybody is grieving.
Right.
So if one person decides to get angry, then they provoke the other person, you know, who hasn't been dealing with their feelings, and then you just get this whole big craziness.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that I have found is in the case of my mother, she was sort of the sun in the universe. She was the center of our solar system, our family solar system. And when she died, we had to literally create new relationships.
Right.
All the relationships were somehow predicated on her being the center. And with her not being in the center anymore, her being gone, we had to negotiate new relationships, find out who we wanted to be close to and who we didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like when you take something off of a mobile, it has to refind its balance again, and you have to find your relationships again.
That's redefining, right.
Your relationships, and you're redefining yourself.
That's right, yes.
And one other thing I know we talked about was creating a new story that empowers you.
Yes.
About that.
So that's really important, too. We have a tendency in our culture to blame mothers. You know, it's that whole litigious society that we're in. And for sure, when you go through a lot of losses, you do feel a bit of a victim, you know, that this is terrible, how horrible this has happened, even though the bottom line is that we all die. There's this book author named Ganga Stone who wrote a book whose name I forget at the moment, but she said, we forget that we were given this lease agreement for our body, and in the print it says, can be revoked at any time with or without warning.
I love that.
I love that too. It's like, oh, hello, there was no promise that you were going to live until 99. There was no promise on that. It can be revoked at any time without warning. And that people do die young, and we feel, you know, that that's tragic. But that was the agreement. So to get closure, to get to the other side, a very important step is to look at the whole experience, to flip it from being the place of being a victim to being empowering. And people who do best with grief are those that take the experience, become curious, and discover something really important about themselves and what they're meant to be doing here.
Yeah,
and grief can do that. Grief can help you, can be a gateway. It can be a guidance system for you when you know how to read it.
Right. And you even know that's possible.
Hmm?
And to even know that that's possible.
That's right.
They don't talk
about
that.
That's right. They don't. No, they don't. Our approach right now is talk therapy, where people get into grief groups and they just talk. And talk and talk and talk, and I guess eventually get tired of talking. And from many standpoints, that could be a problem. Biologically, when we tell the same story over and over and over again, we are re-stimulating the grief and the stress in the body, because the human organism doesn't know the difference between the story and the reality. If you tell a story over and again, you're literally invoking that grief over and over again.
Mm.
And people can get stuck. They can get lost in that grief. And it can become, that can become their life, where, you know, that they become the person. It happens. people, you know, they lost this one person in their lives, and they spend the rest of their lives mourning that,
mm-hmm.
which is, it's a waste.
Yeah. It's certainly a waste. Because the flip side of that, there's all sorts of powerful things that come from that, because that grief carries a lot of energy, and if you can use that energy towards whatever it is that you need to use it for, can be incredibly powerful.
Yes, and a lot of people have done amazing things, and you just look at literature, theater, music, movies. They are just full of examples of people translating that energy into a creative form. In fact, there was a book out last year or the year before about this woman. I can see if I can remember. She goes and she loses her mother, and she takes this huge hike through the mountains of California.
Yeah, right.
Cheryl Strand.
Yeah.
Wild. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, it's a, and then she wrote a book about it. You know, she had to do something, and you can use that energy to do amazing things, and it's very powerful and very motivating, and it can sustain you for a long time. As it did me with making the films. That purpose is very, very powerful. So that's where you change the story. Sometimes I'll talk to a woman who has gone through multiple losses. Like I told you, sometimes they happen in series. You get a whole bunch of them. And they the person feels so beaten down. I say, well, you know, a way to look at it is as a shaman's initiation. If you look at the great shaman, who are out there and their stories, and you know, and some of even the leaders out there, I think, see if I can remember her name, the one who does, oh, I'm sorry, I've forgotten it. But they have stories. They have stories about how difficult their life was before they came to where they were. And in particular, shaman's initiation, they often go through almost near death in order to be initiated into their purpose. So it's just a container. It's a way of looking at it to say, okay, this is my trial by fire that's going to help propel me.
We're just about out of time. You have free gifts that you're going to offer our listeners, and I want you to give them a little bit of information about that.
Okay, so the first thing is available to anybody who's listening to this and is coping with grief right now. And it is my mini book, Six Essentials for Grieving Well. It's an illustrated book of my charming cartoons, and very, very valuable advice. And it also comes with about 7 weeks of follow-up emails with additional advice. And people can get that by going to the website www.griefessentials, that's plural, and one word, no underscores or anything, griefessentials, just one together, .com. And that will take them to a page where they just fill in their information, and they'll get that. In addition, I have a few slots for a one-on-one telephone grief and loss breakthrough session. And this is an hour-long telephone conversation for somebody who really would like to get a breakthrough, is stuck around grief and loss, and we'll take a look at where that person is around their grief, where they want to be, and what are the obstacles, what's stopping them, and actually go away with some resources to use right away. So when they go to griefessentials.com, they will sign up for the mini book and the emails, and then they'll be taken to a page where they can get the link to sign up for a grief and loss breakthrough session if they want to do that.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
They should act on it quickly if they're interested in it, because these slots go fast.
Ah, that's fabulous. What a wonderful thing to offer our listeners. Thank you.
So I'm going to repeat that once more in case people are still getting their piece of the paper. It's www.grief, Essentials, ESSENTIALS.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much. A lot of good information. I could talk to you all day about this stuff. You have such good insight, so much to share.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me on your call. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to remind the listeners real quick that to check their email each morning, we'll let you know what speaker is going to be on for that day. The website, again, is www.bouncingbacksummit.com. And I really appreciate you, Michelle, for visiting us with us today. And I know our listeners are going to check out your free gifts and your website. Now, you have another website too, right?
Yes. My main website is www.secretsoflifeanddeath.com.
Excellent. And you really have a lot of great information on that.
Yes. And the people should... I really encourage them to look at the blog page because I write something every month and there is some really amazing information around death and living consciously and grief and caregiving, and it goes back for pages and pages. There's a lot of great stuff there.
Yeah, there is. Thank you
yes.
so much.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
And good luck with the rest of the telesummit.
Absolutely. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.